Pro Savings Days are on at Lowe's. Get up to 35% off select major appliances. Plus, My Lowe's Pro Rewards members get an additional 5% off when you buy 5 or more select GE, Whirlpool, and Electrolux kitchen or laundry major appliances. Lowe's, we help you save. Valid through 123. Discount valid to My Lowe's Pro Rewards members only. Exclusions and other restrictions apply. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. See associate or Lowe's.com for details. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Visit Lowe's.com/terms for details. Subject to change.
Creativity, what a gift it is. Have you ever gone to a big box hardware store and looked for paint? Whenever I do, I think, how do they come up with all these shades and textures of paint, and then the names for them? There seems to be no end to colors, and that's just one small area of creativity that enriches our lives. As listeners know, we haven't really defined creativity on this podcast, but we have alluded to its having two qualities of originality and functionality. Although that's not all. Let me be clear, functionality doesn't mean money. It means that other people can enjoy it, benefit from it, be enriched by the creative work, and in a sense, they recognize it. I am enriched by the work of our guest today, Millicent Austell Flake of Sugar Valley, Georgia. She is a speaker, author, retired media specialist, minister, and creative person. Join me for our discussion of creativity in her life. Millicent Austell Flake and I have known each other as fellow writers with connections to the former Calhoun Area Writers Group. She has a website I will direct you to in the show notes. It's called Under the Magnolia Tree, which is a great title and reflects her love of nature in Georgia. One of her recent blog posts is about her hike up the notoriously steep Disney hiking trail in Dalton. So we have a lot to talk about here. Millicent, first off, you were the first person I've ever met with the name Millicent. So what is the story of your name, and am I saying it right?
You are saying it right. And unfortunately, I don't have a good story. My mother just always said she had heard it somewhere. It's kind of funny because my sister was named after our two grandmothers, Ruth Ann. All my cousins on my mother's side, all have family names except for me. Oh. I think they're one of the first women senators was named Millicent Fineway, Fine something in the 40s. And I think my mother must have heard it there. But I do not have a good story. Sorry.
Okay. Well, if you're named after the first woman senator, if that's possible.
That is pretty awesome.
Pretty good. Yeah. I have no idea where my mother got my name either. So it is what it is. As much as I hate that expression, it is. So did you grow up and spend most of your time in Northwest Georgia when you were younger, or am I off on that?
No. My growing up years were in North Carolina.
Oh,
yes, I am. We moved. My father worked for Burlington Industries, which is now no more. But we moved a lot growing up, mostly, but in North Carolina. Most of my growing up years were in a little town, which is very similar to Calhoun. It's called Mooresville, North Carolina. It's above Charlotte. And when I was in high school, we moved to Greensboro, and then my parents never moved again after that. So that was kind of home for us and for them until they both passed away now. But I still go up there. I have family and friends in North Carolina. So we moved. My husband and I moved here in 1987.
Okay. So that's interesting. I've spent a lot of time in North Carolina, and my most recent book is set in North Carolina, too. Awesome. My daughter-in-law is from Greensboro. So I was there Christmas. I went to spend Christmas with them, and It was very cold. Yeah. That was the Christmas that it was so freezing here and the South. So that was interesting.
Yeah, it was cold here.
Yes. Yes. And okay. Well, that being the case, then I guess it does make sense that you went to Wake Forest University.
Yes. Because it was literally, Wake Forest is less than an hour from Greensboro. I thought I was going a long ways off, you know, but I was still close to home.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And your major there was?
Psychology.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then, was it right after undergrad that you went to seminary?
Yes. Yes. I went. It was kind of a decision that I made my senior year of college. In my fall of my senior year, some of us seniors were able to take, it was actually a master's level class, but it was on pastoral counseling. And it was taught by one of the pastoral counselors at the Baptist Medical Center there in Winston-Salem, which Winston-Salem has a very large Baptist Medical Center. And I just realized that I was interested in going into some sort of counseling field, and I loved the idea of putting the psychology I had learned with the Bible, kind of putting the two of them together. And that was what really got me excited and what sent me. And at that time, one of the leading writers in the pastoral care field, Wayne Oates, was actually at the seminary in Louisville. And that was why I went up there. That they had a really strong department at that time.
Okay. All right. So you went to seminary in Louisville and got MDiv?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So this is going to get into an area that for some is going to be a little controversial, but that's going to be the way it goes. And the issue of your life in ministry and some of the experiences you've had and some of maybe some people's attitudes about that. So where did you minister?
During my seminary years, and it took, you know, it was a pretty big commitment to get an MDiv,
yes,
which it still is today. It took me 3.5 years. And part of that time I worked in Greensboro at the church there as a youth minister one summer. I worked at another church in Salisbury, North Carolina as a youth minister. And then for the last 2.5 years of my senior years, I drove back and forth about an hour each way to a wonderful little town right in northern Kentucky called Fort Thomas. And it's right below Cincinnati. Mm-hmm. And I was youth minister there and just it was just a wonderful experience. The people just embraced me and had a group of they were junior high and high school, but we still keep up to this day, some of those young people that I was with there. But then after I graduated in December of 84, I think, I moved to Birmingham and worked there as a hospital chaplain for a couple of years.
Oh.
And that's where I met my husband while I was working down there.
Oh, what interesting work.
Yeah. The other thing is I look back on it. I mean, I was just in my 20s, and part of that time I was working with terminal cancer patients with hospice. I worked with the hospice there, and it was a heavy kind of job to do when you're right. 25. You know, I really admire our medical people and that work in those kind of situations all the time, because you almost need to I think if I had been married and had children, it might have been different. You know, I was seeing a different side of life, but sometimes you're just always in the death and dying end can be a little bit, can be a challenge, but it can be very rewarding too.
Yes. I'm going to assume that you were ordained at a church.
My church, home church in Greensboro, First Baptist in Greensboro, ordained me. Being ordained was a requirement to be a hospital chaplain, but it was also something that I wanted to do. And in retrospect, I've kind of laughed about it. I was really kind of spoiled, I think. Until we moved up here to this area, I was just totally supported. I mean, my home church supported me. My family supported me. I was in Birmingham working with other ministers who supported me. And we moved up here and I found out that a lot of people don't support women in ministry. It was a little bit of a, I think I was naive in a lot of ways as to sort of what a lot of maybe more rural or more small town people kind of thought.
I find it's an interesting topic. I'm not sure it really fits into creativity, and but it's an interesting.
It's a little bit of a tangent here.
Yeah, it is a little bit. But and I'll just say, if someone is limited in their way that they could minister, that does fit into the creativity that God has given them.
Yes,
I guess is where I'm going with this. Right. Because you were able to use your gifts in a position that required ordination in the hospice and in the church and the youth ministry. And some people are not, or feel that they are not allowed that because of, and not just because of your gender, but because of maybe formal marital status or other things like that. So it's a, it is relevant to how we are able to use our gifts and how we might be either truly or at least feel that we are not allowed to do that. So and I think a lot of women, a lot of other people struggle with it.
I'll just speak for myself. I grew up like maybe you did, many of us did, in the Southern Baptist Church. We had Lottie Moon offerings and Annie Armstrong offerings and missions. We called them GAs back then. And I just always loved the church. And I feel like from a child, I was told if God's calling you to something, you should say yes and you should go.
Right.
And so I did that. I felt called and I said yes. And then all of a sudden, it was like these people were saying, well, yeah, but you can't do that. And it was very confusing for me.
Yeah.
I mean, it was like, well, and so it's interesting. I have several women friends who were at seminary with me and went into public school. You know, I ended up working in the public schools, which is a mission field. And it's, you know,
absolutely
something to do. One of my good friends in Louisville went and became a chaplain in a mental institution for many years. I'm very excited and I like to think that maybe I had a tiny little role in paving that way. You know? So,
yeah. Knows?
But this book, kind of getting back to the creativity and my book that I wrote and starting my blog, and that's been kind of a way for me to get back to my ministerial roots, I think. You know, the blog is devotionally based. Now, they're not all. I usually try to have a link to a Bible verse in there, but not always. The last one I wrote was about the bathrooms in Italy.
Yes.
But it still hopefully has got to give us a little bit of encouragement, make people think a little bit. So it is related, you know, the creative.
Yes, it is. Because, you know, I think a lot of women who are in more conservative churches face that same you know, I want to do ministry. And then they're told, no, well, no, that you can't become that. And it's definitely a thing to talk about. So, when it's your writing, we want to talk about your book. That is very important. I'm reading it. And I want to say, oh, of course, I want to recommend it. I'm finding it real, authentic, and encouraging. Your voice is very clear and very compassionate, and yet not in any way, I guess the word I would use is treacly, not like a lot of women's, right? That's terrible. I hate to say that, but a lot of women who write devotional literature is just very weepy almost. And yours is based in an understanding of scripture and not an emotional emphasis on that. There's emotion there. I don't mean it that way, but you know, the emotion the emotion doesn't come first. The truth comes first. And so I want to know the story behind the book and then the story about writing the book.
Well, I want to go back to when I started my blog because it's all kind of connected.
Yeah.
One of the things that I feel very strongly about, and I know you are the same way, is encouraging other writers. And you're wonderful at doing this because it's been about 7 or 8 years ago when blogs first came out. You know, I didn't even know mm-hmm. what a blog was. And a woman in my church, I was going to First Methodist in Calhoun at the time because they had women ministry. And there was a woman there who she was actually a speech pathologist. Her name's Ginger. Shout out to Ginger. And she is just a naturally funny person. Ginger's just someone who she's just a funny person. And she started writing a blog. She was raising 2 children. It was just her life, and it was funny, and it was thought-provoking, and I loved it. And I said to her one day, I wish I could do that. And she said, Millicent, you can. And that was really the seed to get me started. And I think so many people say to me, I would like to write a book. And it's just a matter of doing it, you know, and learning about it. I mean, you don't just sit down and write it and it comes out perfect. But I started actually right now. I don't know if on the audio, if you can hear birds singing, but I'm sitting on my porch we have a old house in Sugar Valley. It was built in 1859. And we have a huge magnolia tree, and that's where the name Under the Magnolia Tree came from. So the blog has been so rewarding for me because I've met people through the blog. I've reconnected with old friends. Somehow or another, through the magic of Google, it goes all over the world. I'm always mm-hmm. very surprised when I look at my stats and see where it's gone. But that said, this is a long answer. I hope I'm not taking too much time.
No, it's fine.
I started a novel, which is unfinished. And people ask me, what's your next book going to be? It's going to be this young adult novel that I started about 5 or 6 years ago. And it's loosely based on my experiences when I was in high school. My sister died from cancer. Very, obviously, very difficult situation. The book is set in the 70s. I love 70s rock and roll. And so I kind of can't quote lyrics or anything in a book, but
right.
And use titles. And so I incorporate some of that in it. And it's kind of how I wish my story had turned out, which is one of the wonderful things you can do with fiction writing. You know, you mm-hmm. can write it. Well, it is based on myself at that time, 1976. But the rest of it is fictional. So I had been working on that for off and on for several years. And I retired in 2019 from Valley Point Middle School. I was the media specialist. So, of course, I was around young adult, you know, middle school, high school literature, which there's some wonderful books out there. And that fall, I went with a friend to my first Christian writing conference, which was in Toccoa, Georgia. Mm-hmm. And I can't remember now the name of, you may be familiar with that conference. It was a small conference. It wasn't, there's a big, huge Christian Writers Conference at Blue Ridge. But this was sort of offshoot of it. And I didn't know that at these Christian Writers Conferences, you can sit down with all these editors and agents for free. And you got to talk to all these people. So I like what you said about my book not being like some other women's devotionals, because I sat down. That's a big compliment to me, because I sat down with this woman editor, and I have to kind of laugh because she was a little bit grumpy. You know, you think, oh, a Christian editor, she's going to be all hearts and flowers, but she wasn't. She was kind of grumpy. And we were talking about other books I might be interested in doing. And she said, you know, I'm just tired of these devotional books that are like devotions for golfers, devotions for gardeners. She said, I'm just tired of that. I want something with some meat to it.
Yeah.
So naively, I'm sitting there thinking, well, I've got this seminary degree and I'm retired. I can knock this thing out in a couple of months and I'm back to my model. And you're laughing because, you know, you don't just knock a book out. And
I wish we could.
Right. 4 years later, if I had. So I started working on it, and it was kind of, you know, a work in progress. And I was thinking about how hard all of the emotions I had felt retiring from the school system. And, you know, teachers will always say when you retire in May, it doesn't really hit you till August when everybody else is going back to school. And I was happy to be retired. I was, you know, it was time. But, you know, you miss your friends, you miss the routine. And so I thought about other times of change. I thought about when I had my son and going through, you know, becoming a new mother. Kind of on the other end of the spectrum, I thought about when my parents died, which they died 20 years apart. But, you know, you go through all of that. Just so many changes. So I started looking at people in the Bible who had gone through similar changes. And so that's why each chapter is based on a different person from the Bible. Mm-hmm. And when they went through changes, and I did a lot of studying on it. And then again, naively, I thought, well, there's just going to be tons of people wanting to publish this book. And I started sending out, queries and, you know, to all of these Christian publishers, and just was not getting anywhere. Nobody was interested. And one of the things that I kind of learned is a lot of these, even smaller publishing companies, they would like for you to have a huge following, like 5,000 Instagram followers or be pastor of a big church. Mm-hmm. And, this has been a year ago, January. I had been talking with a company that is a hybrid company. You pay them to publish your book, but they don't take just anybody. They are choosy, and they are affiliated with Cooperative Baptist. So I felt like they were reputable, and they had expressed a lot of interest in wanting to publish it. But when I had finished it and finally sent it into them, I said, okay, I'm going to do this hybrid. The man I had been emailing with emailed me back, and he said, Nelson, I think this book is really good. I really like your writing, but it's not long enough. He said, we really need, I don't remember how many words. And I was just like, I can't even pay somebody to publish this book. I was so upset. So I just put it on the shelf. I just said, all right, Lord, you know, I thought you were guiding me to write this book. And the conference that you and I were at this past Saturday, one of the women talked about painting her bedroom when she got frustrated with, and I kind of did the same thing. I decided to completely redo my dining room and kitchen and pretty much didn't do much writing. I just worked on my house, and which was, it was a, you know, good. I needed to. And meantime, and I was still blogging, still doing the blog, but this time last year, I was actually getting ready to get on a boat and go down the Amazon River on a Bible study mission trip through an organization called Justice and Mercy International. And Kelly Minter is a Bible teacher. She now publishes through Lifeway. She's phenomenal. I highly recommend her. And she was part of this trip. And it was just a very, very much you felt very close to the Holy Spirit when you're out on this boat. We were totally, you know, off the grid. We were sitting up on this boat with the wind blowing and being having Bible study and with all these other women. And we also went into the villages and did some ministry. And when I got back from that, and it was such a life-changing experience, I just felt like God said to me, well, Melson, are you ready to let me help you with this book now? And I said, okay. And I decided that I would self-publish. And once I made that decision, I just felt very much at peace. I felt very free. I thought, I'm going to do it how I want to do it. And because I just didn't feel like I could take someone, another rejection on it. And my cousin's daughter is an artist. She lives, well, she did live in Durham, North Carolina. She has recently moved to Virginia, Grayvon Cannon. And she did my cover, which I think is beautiful.
Yes.
So, you know, I worked with her on that. I started, I went back to my original manuscript and realized that what the editor had said to me was true. In fact, I recently emailed him and thanked him. I said, thank you for telling me that this book wasn't ready, because it just wasn't ready. I really, all last fall, just kept working on it, and it just flowed. It was like the gates had opened, and it just, you know, the ideas would come, the scripture was there. So I self-published it in, really in January, but I didn't really advertise that it was out till the first.
Okay. Now, it says Harbor.
Oh, that's kind of made up.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I wonder if they were published through Lulu. Lulu.com. And our mutual friend Amber Nagel, who has been a wonderful help to me, she had said, I can call it anything I want to. So the road that we ended on is Harbor Road. So that's kind of a pretend. It's what I called it.
I had Googled them, and there is a harbor something.
Yes. And I actually Googled it myself and made sure I did not have the exact same wording as this. Is a Harbor Publishing, but no, I just put it in there I just called it Harbor. Our house The Harbor family lived in this house for over 100 years. They were, and it's a kind of a landmark in Sugar Valley. A lot of people know this house. It was one of the first houses built here. So, you know, we take a lot of pride in that. But we like to say we're more, look, it's not, it's, we're sort of looking after the house. Of course, we've been here for 35 years, but so that's why I put the Harbor Publishing.
I like that we're looking after the house.
Yes.
I like that.
Yes.
That's funny you say that you meant, I have sometimes published under a certain imprint of my own, you know, that I'll put on things, but but it doesn't have as much meaningfulness, I think, as Harbor Road. I like that one. Where exactly is Sugar Valley?
Sugar Valley is a little bit northwest of Calhoun. So if you're coming down 75 and like the Carbon, you might remember the Carbondale Road exit.
Yes.
That's the exit that I take. It goes through a little community called Hill City. And then you're at Orr. The next exit down is 136, and you probably have seen it if you're going south on 75. If you go left, you go to Resaca.
Yes.
If you go right, you go to Lafayette, and we're off of that road. So.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Literally, yeah, I knew that. About 7 miles from Calhoun. So, you know, I sort of say I live in Calhoun, but I'm in Dalton a lot with my church, and I've got a lot of friends in Dalton. So,
okay. I think that Georgia has some of the neatest names for towns.
Yes.
There's Dewey Rose. My brother-in-law used to live he worked in a group home for children for, it was Southern Baptist, and it was called Dewey Rose, Georgia. It's over on the other northeast side. There's Rising Fawn.
Yes.
Is that not the most beautiful name for a town?
Right.
A place?
Right.
And, Ball Ground, that's not as romantic. And Talking Rock.
Yeah.
And Cherry Log.
Yeah.
Those are just so beautiful.
Yeah.
So Sugar Valley made me think of those.
And I have done some. Sugar Valley is a really fascinating area because at one time, 100 years ago, it was a thriving little town. It had a big iron ore operation. There were trains going through. There was they called it a seminary back then, but it was a women's, a girls' school. This would have been more the turn of the century. It had a hotel and a store. And my understanding is the name came from the fact that there were sugar maple trees here.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So it was a kind of a big town at one time. So it's pretty quiet now. We do have a post office and we're getting a Dollar General. That's the big news. We're getting a Dollar General out here. So,
oh my, is that progress?
Well, and for whatever reason, the land, like if you go to South Gordon County, there are just tons and tons of neighborhoods, and the land in Sugar Valley has not sold like that. So we're still pretty rural out here.
That's pretty good. You know, talking about town names, it's one that's a kind of creativity in itself. What do you name a town? There's a town in South Carolina called 96.
I haven't heard of that one.
And there's a history behind it, but it's just they couldn't think of a name, so they just gave it a number. I've always thought that was funny.
Yeah. Lacking creativity in that one.
Yeah, lacking in that one. So we, as you mentioned, we just attended a wonderful writers' conference in Cartersville last week. And a lot of good things happened there for me. I was revved up. So what about you? Do you go to writers' conferences much? And do you think of them?
You know, I have not because of COVID, you know.
That's true.
In fact, I kind of laugh you know, I retired in May, went to that writers conference that fall, and just was all excited to start doing writers conferences. And then we all know what happened March of 2020, you know, everything kind of shut down. But what I am excited about starting to go back to some, in February, I went, I highly recommend this one. I went to Eatonton, Georgia, which is on Lake Hartwell, east of Atlanta. Mm-hmm. To the, you may not know that in Eatonton is the Georgia Writers Museum there.
Oh, no.
And it's also, my understanding is that was where the man, the person who wrote Uncle Remus stories,
Can't
think of his name.
Joel Chandler Harris.
Yes. So I think maybe that's why they have the museum there. But they put on a writer's workshop every year, and it was wonderful. And again, it was the first one I've been to in 4 years because of COVID. And during COVID, which I'm sure you did, I did some online things. But, you know, for me, and this is nothing against the speakers. Speakers are wonderful. But I feel like when you go to a conference, the real benefit is meeting people and talking to other writers. And you learn more in the in between the conference, the speakers, than sometimes you do. And, you know, when you do something online, you don't really get that. You know, you lose out on that. So,
I think the networking is really important, because you really have to know other writers for a number of reasons, you know.
Right. So. Because writers, we all help each other. You know, I think that's one of the things I love about it. We're supportive of each other. And, it, you know, it's at least my experience has been that way. Maybe if you're up in the big leagues, it's not that way. But, I've had just so many people have been supportive and helpful. So.
Now, at the conference, one of the speakers, the main one, Loretta Hannon, whom I did not know, quoted Dorothy Parker, who said, "I hate writing, but love having written." And I think we can all relate to that, or maybe not. I mean, I get sometimes so lost in the process that I have an experience later. I'll go back and read it and say, where in the world did that come from?
Right.
I wasn't personally conscious of or aware of that. And
isn't
then
that exciting when that happens, when you're
it's a little weird. Where did that come from? Yeah. You know?
Yes.
So how do you respond to that quote from Dorothy Parker?
I think so. She also mentioned that she works. I don't know if she works full time, but I know she said she is a fun. She works at the Georgia Highlands, and that she gets up like at 5 a.m. to write. And what I tell you what I relate it to. I had been a runner for many years. Right now, I'm more of a run walker. But for many years, and we kind of laugh about it now, my friends and I, we got up super early, like 4:30 in the morning to go run before we had to be at work. And I still, this morning, I met my friends at 6 a.m. because they still have jobs that they have to be ready early. But I don't like getting up, and I don't, you know, the actual getting there. But once I'm there, I love it. And I'm sort of the same way with writing. Sometimes I have to make myself sit down, and I have a sticky note on my computer screen that says butt in the chair that I put in there years ago. Yeah. And like you said, once I sit down and start doing it, I love it and I don't want to stop. But it's just sometimes it's hard to make myself sit down and do it. And that sort of seems like it shouldn't. I guess it's like anything. It's just it takes a little bit of effort. You have to think about it, you know. But once I start, I love it.
Yes. Going back to your book in this, the idea of having written it, now that you've got it out there, what's happened? if you've gotten.
You know, and I know you have written many books, and this is my first one, but it has been the most wonderful experience. I have had just a lot of doors open, that has been my prayer that through this doors would open. I've been really busy. In fact, I have not been doing a lot of writing because I'm so busy promoting this, which is a good thing. I knew it would be that way. I did a book launch at the Calhoun Arts Center or Harris Arts Center in Calhoun back in February February. Had a writer friend help me with that. Gray Bridges, she did a great job. I went to North Carolina, and one of my good friends in Greensboro had a signing for me with a bunch of our high school friends. And then I went to Italy for 2 weeks with my son and his wife and his wife's mother. And then I got back from that, and I had been invited through a seminary friend to be a presenter at our state Cooperative Baptist Senior Adult Workshop at St. Simon's. So I came back from Italy. I was home a week, and then I went to St. Simon's, did a book signing there. Speaking at our Calhoun Friends of the Library meeting in about another week. So it's been fun. It's been great. And I'm hoping that it's going to be more opportunities. I'm really hoping. I've had some people talk about wanting me to come to their churches and speak, and I would love that. You know, so far it's just been people saying, oh yeah, sometime we'd love for you to come. And I haven't been anything definite yet, but I'm hoping that'll happen. And just kind of riding the wave. I know it, you know, when you have a book, it, you know, after a while, it'll sort of start to peter off, and then I'll get back to other things. So.
Well, you know, I was listening to someone who is more well-known and had just written a book and said that in the first month or so is critical that you do a lot of promoting. So my book is coming out next week, and Carly is, she's got me, you know, she's setting me up to go to Kansas. And it's kind of, I have been, although I've written a lot, I've been the world's worst promoter. I've just not, for a variety of reasons, just not done that. And
well, it's kind of most, you know, writing and promoting are kind of two ends of the spectrum. So a lot of, you know, a lot of people don't like to do the, you know, it's kind of, I feel like I sort of have both parts of that in my personality. I don't mind, but yeah, it's so you're fortunate you've got Carly doing a lot of that for you.
Yes, her her assistant is setting up some things, Kelly. Awesome. So that's good. She's got me going to down closer to Atlanta. Which will be and then in Douglas County and then in Rome. So I don't, you know, I'm going kind of far around.
Yeah, I'm having to go out and beat the bushes a little bit myself. I will say, and I want to say this to just promote a little bit that just yesterday I went by and talked with the owners at Raspberry Row in Dalton and the Green Door, which is downtown, and they both are now carrying my books. So if anyone would like to, if you're in Dalton or that area and you want to pick up a book, both of those stores have them. So again, that's one of those things I'm having to sort of put myself out there a little while and just go ask, you know, what can the, and then I have a couple of places in Calhoun that have been selling them for me and had, they've sold pretty well. We have a Christian bookstore in Calhoun called The Lighthouse, and I've sold a lot of books there, which is, and then I feel like hopefully that it helps their business. Maybe if someone comes in for my book, they'll buy something else, you know, so.
Right. Yeah.
Want to help the local businesses out.
Yeah, I'm trying to do that. I have a book signing at a local business in Catoosa next week, and I'm trying to push the support local, you know, local publisher, local author, local business, you know, not a chain, that kind of thing. So as far as what's next in your writing world, you're still working on the YA novel?
Yes. And when things kind of settle down here and I catch my breath. Also, this time of year, I love to be working with my flowers, and I do have a vegetable garden and all that takes your time. But I am going to go back to my YA novel and wrap it up and start seeing, you know, if I want to self-publish it. I did have some interest back when I kind of dropped it and started working on this one, which I would not recommend that. I put back on it now, and I would not recommend that to other people, but that's what I ended up doing. But on the other hand, I've heard a lot of people say your first book is kind of that's the one you learn on, I guess. And I have definitely learned a ton from getting this one out there. So, and the second book will be very different. It'll be a different audience. Hopefully, I will be able to call up some of my media specialist friends and see if they want me to come get into the schools, which I would love to do. So, so we'll see. It'll be a different way to go, but I'm hoping with that book. And actually, this several years ago when I was first started it, and I was actually at the Red Clay Writers Conference at Kennesaw, which started back this year. I was not able to go because, unfortunately, I was in Italy, so I couldn't go to the Red Clay Writers
Conference. I picked Italy over Kennesaw. Yeah.
So, but I remember just sort of standing around talking to a woman about the book, and I told her it was about a girl who was dealing with grief after her sister dies. Mm-hmm. And she said, my daughter is in high school and just had a close friend die, and she's really struggling. And she said, I think a book like that would be helpful to her.
Yes.
So that's kind of, you know, hoping that maybe, because when this happened in 1976, I didn't have anything to read or any stories about that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. I think people are much more open now than they used to be back then about talking about things.
Yes. Yes. I think that's you have an audience in that respect there.
Right.
It's an important topic. So thank you for joining us today, Millicent. Listeners, you can find her book, Moving Beyond, Journeying Through Life's Changes, at the places she mentioned, for example, Raspberry Row in Dalton and the Green Door. And is it also online?
Yes. It's on Amazon. It's on Barnes & Noble. You can also order it directly from lulu.com.
Again, thank you for joining us. And listen next time for another creator from the Tennessee Valley, North Georgia region. Goodbye.